Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich, and as always, our conversation includes you. If you'd like to join us anytime during the hour, our phone lines are open at 941-3689. That's from Oahu, 941-3689. And from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream, you can join the conversation at 877-941-3689. Is it redundant or is it really necessary? Governor Ige is no doubt asking himself that question as the sex trafficking bill sits on his desk. It was unanimously passed by the legislature this past session, but Honolulu's prosecuting attorney is making the case that Senate Bill 265-CD1 will thwart law enforcement's ability to root out prostitution. He says current law is sufficient. More proof, according to opponents, is that Hawaii is now ranked by the national nonprofit Polaris Project as among the best states for anti-trafficking law. That's a switch from only 4 years ago when Hawaii was listed among the worst. So tonight on Town Square, we're going to talk about the bill, and we want to hear what you have to say about it. Again, our phone number is 941-3689 from Oahu or 877-941-3689. Joining us by phone from her San Francisco office is Dr. Melissa Farley. She has written 26 peer-reviewed articles on prostitution and trafficking. She's also the author of two books. She co-authored an international survey of prostitution and PTSD in 9 countries, a study of trafficked Native American women in the United States and Canada, and a study comparing sex buyers to non-sex buyers. In 1995, Dr. Farley founded Prostitution Research and Education. Its goal is to abolish prostitution and offer alternatives to those in it. Also joining us by phone is Justin Kohler. He is the prosecuting attorney for the County of Kauai. He is responsible for prosecuting all crimes arising under state law or county charter within the County of Kauai. He favors the sex trafficking bill. And in studio is Catherine Jean. She is a longtime anti-trafficking advocate. She's also the executive director and founder of the Pacific Alliance to Stop Slavery. And a program note, we did invite Honolulu prosecuting attorney Keith Kaneshiro to join the panel. He was unable to be here. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you, Bethan.
Hi, welcome. Hi. Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Justin, I want to start with you. The public has heard that in addition to Honolulu's prosecuting attorney, law enforcement, the attorney general, and public defender are not in favor of the bill. To your knowledge, is that true?
I believe those agencies all did testify against the bill at different times while it was going through the process. For, you know, they each had their own reasons, I think, but yeah, I think that's basically accurate.
And would that be true of the last version of the bill, the CD1 version as well?
You know, I don't know because I haven't discussed with those agencies what their take on the CD1 was, but I suspect that their positions, I don't know. My best answer is I don't know.
Okay, then why do you support it? What makes you want to support this, even if it were true that all these other agencies feel that it's redundant or at worst causing a problem or would cause a problem to thwart dealing with prostitution?
Well, we felt like that this year was the right time for Hawaii to, you know, join the other 49 states and enact a comprehensive sex trafficking ban and give prosecutors, give victim advocates, give law enforcement, you know, a new set of tools in the toolbox to help you know, take a more victim-centered approach, take a more survivor-centered approach, and really try and hit at where the problem is being driven from, which is from the pimps and the johns, essentially.
You say that it lends more tools. That seems to be just the opposite of what we're hearing from Keith Kaneshiro, that there's a narrowing and then there are possible loopholes. How do you reconcile those two perspectives?
Well, you know, he has a different scope of the problem in Honolulu, for sure, to deal with over there. So, you know, I can't tell him basically, you know, what he needs to make his cases, and I wouldn't presume to tell him how to do his job. You know, we all have to work together here, and you know, I know that they're doing what, you know, the best that they can. So I'm not going to tell them that they're wrong about what they need to make their cases. But from our perspective, the tools that are being given to law enforcement in this bill are tools that will help move the movement forward.
Specifically, what tools?
Well, there's in terms of making the prostituted persons, you know, eligible for things like crime victim compensation and victim assistance support, and tools given to law enforcement in terms of being able to, you know, seek wiretap orders, being able to charge different types of conduct under the rubric of sex trafficking, you know, I think is an enhancement.
And what about for minors?
For minors, you know, the existing promoting prostitution laws already require that, you know, the defendant be shown to know that his victim is under the age of 18. So the new bill doesn't add that new requirement, you know, into the A felony level offense. So that's, you know, based on our reading of the applicable drafts and the applicable case law.
All right, stay with us. I want to bring Catherine Jean into the conversation. As you look at a lot of the controversy that's still spinning around this bill, despite what happened in the legislature, is there controversy that's being fomented by correct information or incorrect information?
Incorrect information. I will go beyond what Justin has diplomatically said and say that the prosecutor, city prosecutor in Honolulu, is making some grave misstatements to mislead the public about what the actual new law would do. He has claimed in Civil Beat that it would make the offense of proving child trafficking harder, as well as for adults, and that is not true at all. As Justin highlighted, the language for the child trafficking offense is exactly the same as existing law. What we're really doing is making this a comprehensive response as well as a victim-centered response to forced, coerced trafficking of adults and the trafficking of children.
You brought up Civil Beat. This morning, they put out an editorial basically saying that Governor Ige should veto the bill.
Yeah, and that came as a very big surprise because I really knew Civil Beat editors as being very good at fact-checking what officials, especially law enforcement, says. So Civil Beat is known for questioning the integrity and of law enforcement of late, you know, challenging.
So what didn't they check?
They didn't check the bill language, for one thing, or juxtapose it with the existing law to see what changes had been made, what similarities they are, and basically to check if the prosecutor's statements were actually true and valid.
What specifically would you point to within the context of that editorial that you feel was false?
Basically reiterating what the misstatements were made by the city prosecutor, that it would be harder to prove child trafficking, which is not the case because the language hasn't changed, and it would be harder to prove adult trafficking based on the enumerated offenses added to the definition, which is an option for prosecutors to use in existence with what's already there that hasn't changed in the bill or in the existing law. So we just literally added more tools for the tool belt, as Justin said, for prosecutors, if they can't prove force, threat, or coercion in prostitution, to be able to say, okay, well, this woman was kidnapped, so then we can now establish sex trafficking because we can't prove force. So things like that, that just adds more ability for prosecutors to bring these traffickers to justice. And it's mind-boggling to me why the city prosecutor in Honolulu does not see that.
A few nights ago, you put out a press release pretty late in the evening where you said that he had been reading the wrong version of the bill.
Right.
And that was the basis of his comments.
Right. It really seemed that way because it seemed to me that, and many advocates, that he was reading something that just was not existing in the final draft. So we gave him the benefit of the doubt and said, okay, well, he must be using an earlier version, you know, and just didn't get up to speed because, yeah, there were problems in earlier versions, but we vetted them out very thoroughly and completely with everybody at the table. Civil Beat went so far to say, that the AG and HPD also recommend veto, and that's absolutely not true. That was a egregious misstatement made by Todd Simmons in the comment section of their op-ed today. The AG, as we all know, does not publicly disclose whether or not they recommend veto due to client-attorney privilege with the governor.
But as Justin was just saying, that if they've already testified against the bill, you might infer that they're not in favor of it.
Well, any layperson would do that, yeah. But a lot can change between bill draft to bill draft. And what is not disclosed, is publicly anyway, is the disposition of all these agencies on the CD version. So you can't accurately assess the position of an agency based on an earlier draft of a bill.
I want to bring Dr. Melissa Farley into this conversation. Aloha, Dr. Farley. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
As you have read the bill as it stands now and waiting for the governor to make his decision about it, how does this bill fit into what you've seen across the states? How consistent is it with other states?
Well, I think what Justin and Catherine are saying is I would agree with that this bill is part of a trend in the country to view prostitution as a crime with perpetrators, traffickers, and johns, and a victim, the person who's being sold or being bought for sex. So to increase the criminal charge, as I understand this, because elevate it to a class of felony, which is extremely important in my view. I mean, we're talking about the crime of buying another human being to use for sex, or as a John that I once interviewed described it, renting an organ for 10 minutes. If you can imagine what that feels like to the person whose organs are being rented, it really is a human rights violation. So any state, including the state of Hawaii, that advances its understanding of the victimhood and the perpetrator activity in this crime, I think it's a good thing. And it's happening generally, that there is an increased understanding that we're after organized crime, pimps, traffickers, whether they're operating at an international level, which many of them do in Honolulu, or whether they're thugs operating at a local level, assisting the international organized crime. We're after those people. We're also after the people who are buying, who make it all, who drive the market for prostitution.
Is there not enough emphasis on the latter, on those who are driving the market?
I think it's possible to charge them under this bill.
Go ahead.
You know, I'm aware of some folks in law enforcement who would describe buying sex as part of a conspiracy to traffic someone, because you're involved. Police officers that I've spoken to that are arresting Johns tell us that they have a tremendous amount of information about trafficking, about selling, about where it's happening on the World Wide Web, about the internet sites that are selling women. And so I think that's where we're going to learn more and be more effective.
Stay with us. If you're just joining us now, we're talking about the bill that's sitting on Governor Ige's desk, possibly waiting for his veto, as Honolulu prosecuting attorney Keith Kaneshiro would like, or perhaps to be allowed to pass into law without a signature, or perhaps even to sign it. We're talking about the sex trafficking bill, and we want to hear what you have to say about it. The phone lines are open, 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, use that number, 941-3689, Or if you call us from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream someplace else, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. That's also the number if you are on the neighbor islands. 877-941-3689 is the number to call. I've been watching your head nod here, Catherine John, as we've been listening to what Dr. Farley has said about being able to look at the market forces of all of this. But there are those who come back to a very fundamental argument that says, well, why not just legalize it?
Well, legalization doesn't work. I'm sure Dr. Farley would agree with me, being a staunch advocate of abolition. You know, this is a criminal industry and operates like a business. So if you attack it like you would attack a business that you don't want to exist anymore, you would go after the demand that fuels the market. And she's right by mentioning that law enforcement in other states are focusing on shifting that focus to the demand side, arresting the pimps, getting them to give information about traffickers, then starting cases against brothel owners and people who facilitate the industry for Johns. That has not been even touched here in Hawaii. We're going so far as to arrest prostituted persons now for sexual assault, and that's pretty unprecedented as well as abusive.
You're talking about the case from just about a week or so ago.
Exactly, yeah. It surprised everybody in the advocate world that are trying to convince these women that, you know, law enforcement is a source of help. By going after them with sex assault four, you're just making the problem of trying to bring everybody up to speed with these victim-centered approaches. You've set us back 20 years where we've proven time and time again in other states, in other agencies, in other jurisdictions, that victim-centered approaches work. You know, they don't harm the victim. They enable the victim some level of empowerment to want to be able to go through the court process herself willingly without having to coerce her into testifying against her abuser.
Dr. Farley? I'd like to get you to answer that same question, too. When we hear from people who just say, okay, why not just legalize it? What do you tell them?
I would say look at the evidence. There was a study out a year and a half ago of 150 different countries where legal prostitution had been implemented, and this was done by economists. They were asking the question, does legal prostitution increase trafficking, as some of us have been saying for years and as victim advocates have seen and law enforcement has seen? And the answer is yes. Wherever in the world prostitution is legalized, trafficking is increased. You see that, for example, in the Netherlands and in Germany, where upwards of 80%, that's 80%, of those in legal brothels have been trafficked there. Some organized crime experts think it's even higher. I mean, you've got the mayor of Amsterdam, an honest man, saying, we thought it would work. We thought it would reduce the stigma and make it safer, and we were wrong. It's like laying a legal welcome mat out to pimps and traffickers. That's what legal prostitution is, and it's been pretty devastating in its consequence. And yet, what we hear from often is the advocates, the sex industry advocates, and why I'm delighted to be, you know, part of this program with a prosecutor and a victim's rights advocate, because those are the voices we should be listening to. Prosecutors who are concerned with getting crime victims' money to victims of prostitution instead of arresting them for assault. I will tell you that when I heard that, I was shocked. In most parts of the United States, you arrest, you fine and put on suspension a police officer who touches anyone in prostitution. You do not have to touch them to make a case, which you shouldn't even be doing in the first place. I think most places are not even arresting victims, but where they do arrest women in prostitution, they certainly don't touch them. And I think the wrong person's being charged with sexual assault, frankly, by the HPD. The person being charged with sexual assault should be the police officer making the arrest, not the person in the massage brothel, which is probably run by organized crime in the first place.
Dr. Farley, as you hear also from people who are sex workers, we've heard from some who have said, you know, it's our bodies. They are our bodies. We should be able to do with as we please. But if you're saying that legalized prostitution doesn't work and certainly illegal prostitution doesn't work, is there a place for anyone who has the opinion that some sex workers do that they should be able to engage in this?
Well, Beth Ann, that is a question I've been hearing for the last 10 years. And I'll tell you, I've thought a lot about it. I've studied prostitution in many, many different countries, interviewed many, many women in prostitution. And the question that I hear from them is the reverse of what you just asked. The question I hear from them is, do we have a right to exist without prostitution? Can we get housing? Can we get child care? Can we get help with our educations? Because we want to get out. Now, the argument empirically is, what percent of people who describe themselves as sex workers are those whose voice you're reflecting? Do you want to take a guess?
I'd rather have you tell us what you have found.
There isn't any argument about that. I've been in debates with sex workers in San Francisco, and they and scholars and researchers like me, we all agree it's about 1 to 2% of everyone in the sex industry who says, I have a right to be a sex worker. I love this work. It's fun. It's sexy. I'm getting rich. More often than not, those are people who are white, privileged by class, and they have options to escape when after the first or the second rape. Like they have relatives who give them a month's rent, or they have somebody that they can stay with. Most of the time, people in prostitution do not have those options, and they desperately are seeking them. So that's who I think those of us on this show, those are the voices that we're trying to reflect here.
Now, I just want to let you know that we've had to say goodbye to Justin Kohler. He had a previous appointment, so he is no longer with us now. But as we continue... As we continue with the conversation and look at this point of, is it possible to do away with prostitution? I mean, people will say things like, well, it's the oldest profession. And I mean, we've heard that. I'm sure you've heard it ad nauseum. But looking at how long mankind has been with some form of prostitution, is it possible to be without it?
I'd like to think that, you know, since... You know, we live in a modern age and we've come so far from the beginning of time and women's liberation that equality for between women and men is possible. If that is the case, and I believe that is the case, that we can attain that state, then prostitution would not equate in that, you know, situation. It would not fit in. So, yes, I do believe that prostitution can be abolished with the rise of more women's liberation and freedoms and true equality. I'd like to also echo what Melissa Farley said about differences of prostituted persons and the minority of sex workers. And I've heard the prosecutor who wants our bill vetoed say over and over again that not all prostitutes are victims, according to him. And so that's why he's against the sex trafficking ban. But he fails to realize that the sex trafficking ban only applies to women who are forced into prostitution or children who are controlled by a trafficker in prostitution. It does not include prostituted persons, you know, who are independent, you know, or sex workers. You know, the prostitution laws still exist for that category. So when he attacks our sex trafficking ban, he's doing so very narrowly and very in a way that misleads the general public. And it's also surprising because back in 2010, his platform was, you know, to run for prosecutor, his platform was based on creating victim-centered laws. Now, some odd years later, to see him and hear him say everything against victim-centered laws.
Have you had conversations with him where you've told him that?
I haven't told him how appalled I am. No, but given the opportunity, I shall.
Well, I mean, from the point that you say is factual, whereas if he's only narrowly looking at a part of it that is looked at in such a way as to disregard everything else around it, that is an adjunct to what's already existing now,
mm-hmm.
and also to say that, you know, there was once upon a time where you were looking at victim-centered law, and now that seems to be
right.
not the case. Although he has said that he would like to see a home opened up and looking to be able to do that, but that's one small bit of a very large picture.
One small unrealistic bit if he plans to act so in opposition to victim-centered approaches, as well as try cases against prostituted persons for sex assault in the fourth degree. That sends a message to women and children trapped in the sex trade that, you know, the prosecutors is not a source of help.
I know this may be a very difficult subject to talk about, but you guys are awfully quiet tonight. Usually you are certainly weighing in with your opinions. And really, how do you feel about the idea that we could get rid of prostitution in Hawaii? We've got a sex trafficking bill that's on the governor's desk, waiting to see what he will do with it. As you have been following some of this, and no doubt you have, what do you feel about prostitution? What do you feel about sex trafficking in Hawaii and what this bill would do? Have you read the latest version of the bill that is sitting with the governor? 941-3689 is our number if you're on Oahu, 941-3689. Or 877-941-3689. Dr. Farley, when we look at this bill and you can read through it and just enumerate the things that that it does relative to other states, is this bill, the whole bill as you've read it, consistent with other states?
Oh, I'll tell you, I don't feel that I'm a legal expert in all of this, and I can't answer that. What I can tell you is there are a range of sex trafficking bills that states have proposed.
Is there any way of being able to peg where Hawaii would be with this bill?
This seems to be a very good bill, in my view. This seems to be a good bill. I mean, you've got bills like that, anti-trafficking bills that came up in the state of Nevada, which is essentially an anti-immigration bill, which was just horrible. And, you know, you've got people struggling in New York to make the crime a more serious crime, and this bill does do that, which is a really good thing. It looks like a good bill to me. Could I say something about this question of prostitution's the oldest profession? Are we ever going to get rid of it?
Sure, please.
I swear, some very clever pimp thought that line up, and people have been repeating it ever since. I'd like to quote a colleague, Norma Ramos, the former director of the Coalition Against Trafficking in Women, who described prostitution as the oldest oppression. And I guess what I would say about that, being realistic, being a psychologist, seeing human beings in their habitats for many years, is we do have a predatory side. There are murders committed. There is incest committed. There is sexual violence and battering. Yet we don't say, oh, it's the oldest activity, let's give up on it and never pass a law against murder. Somehow that statement it's the oldest profession, turns people brain dead, and they stop thinking and discussing it. We need strong laws to discourage the more predatory among us from committing these kind of crimes. Is it going to go away completely? Like Catherine, I hope so, but so what? Even if it takes a long, long time and we move slowly, let's at least make clear where we stand on these issues. We don't want to see this abuse of human beings happening, and we want to pass the strongest state laws that we can against it.
Well, it seems that a lot of our audience has something you've said has triggered a nerve, Dr. Farley, because the phone lines are lighting up. If you'd like to join us, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Miriam calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Miriam. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Thank you for having me. I agree with all the things that Dr. Farley says that about strong laws and the victim crimes, and I'm also agree with the lady that spoke before that, being puzzled at the prosecutor's about face on his why he's against the new laws. I agree with all that, but I also think that because of the way the world is, and as Dr. Farley said, there is a predatory side. No matter what you do, something's going to happen. But if prostitution was legalized and you had medical standards and everything was cleaned up, that would take care of that part, and your trafficking laws would take care of that other part. Nobody's mentioned anything about how Nevada works. They have their houses outside the main part of town, and they're well-run and all that kind of stuff. So I haven't heard anybody saying that doesn't work.
Well, can I stop you for a second? Can I stop you for a second there?
Your views, but regardless of whether it's the oldest profession in the world or not, crap is still going to happen. And, yes, you do need the laws for people that are forced into this and for the children that are forced into it. But on the other side of the coin, if you have laws that legalize it, that can also help stop it.
Okay.
So thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Miriam. But I want to go back to something that you were talking about earlier, Dr. Farley, because, you know, Miriam's going back to the point of, well, why don't you just legalize it? Look at Nevada. And from what you said a little while ago, in countries where it's legal, that there are just as many problems, if not more so.
I don't know if Miriam has been in the Nevada brothels. I've been in a lot of them. We did a study on Nevada legal prostitution, and that's some of the worst prostitution I've ever seen any place in the world. It's pretty devastating. And when she says crap happens, I think what she's saying is, yes, it's pretty awful, but can't we fix it up a little bit, like health checks, and at least get that out of the picture? And I think maybe there isn't an understanding there, Miriam, as to what those whose interests those health checks are in. We're not talking about checking John's for herpes and STDs to protect the women in prostitution. We're talking about protecting the Johns from the transmission of STDs that has been given them by Johns, and which then they pass on to another John. We're talking about that. That's only 20 years ago, people thought that HIV and STDs were the biggest problem in prostitution, and what we now know is that violence is the biggest problem in prostitution, according to those in it. And that is not resolved by legal brothels. You know, you just have a double layer of pimping. You got a pimp in their hometown that moves them to Nevada, and then you've got a legal pimp who, in all honesty, is an ominous person. I've met a number of them. I've had one of them put a gun to my head. Never happened to me anyplace else in the world except a Nevada legal brothel. So they're not very nice places.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Farley. We're going to continue to take some more callers. If you'd like to join us, The phone lines are open, but they're filling up, so call us sooner rather than later, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to April calling us from Hawaii Island. April, are you there?
Yeah, I turned off my radio.
Thank you. Thank you.
I wanted to point out that many relationships, even those that are not in prostitution, have a quality of prostitution about them. A woman may get married because she feels like she needs the financial assistance of a man. She gets married, and she, in essence, without the love or the innocent, pure motives, she is also prostituting herself in order to have what she wants, in the case of both of them, financial security.
Okay, but I want to stop.
I want to mostly point out is that there are people in this world who don't have an outlet for sexual enjoyment, for sexual release, and unless there is a prostitute who is an individual who makes her mind up and has a will of her own and says, "This is how I would like to make my living," and then she decides to do that, and then here is this lonely man who needs that outlet. What is going to happen to the lonely men in this world who have a symbiotic and a relationship that seems to be at least harmonious on those deep levels of sensuality that many religious people don't understand?
Well, what about all
they
the lonely women?
They don't understand that the world is full of S&M.
Okay,
it's
all right. I want to get Dr. Farley to answer you on that one. So, Dr. Farley, she's saying, what about all these lonely men? And as I'm asking, what about all the lonely women? And forgetting the issue about whether women get married for economic security, and you know, some say, well, you know, they're sort of prostituting themselves. That all aside, but coming back to that idea of, do we need prostitutes? That's essentially what April is asking.
I mean, I would point out that she's right. In marriage, sometimes women are, in effect, prostituting themselves to one man. That's the big difference. We are not talking about 10 sweaty, smelly strangers a day or in 1 or 2 days. There's a huge difference. Women in prostitution count the total number of Johns as an index of the overall harm they've experienced. As far as the lonely men, I started interviewing men who buy sex 6 or 7 years ago, and I went into it thinking they were going to be pretty horrible human beings, and what I found out is there is a vulnerability there in many of them. Yeah, some of them are straight-up sadists, like she says. They're looking for extreme vulnerability. What all of them do, however, is they objectify a person, and they assume, and we found this out in recent studies, they assume essentially the right to access sex 24/7. Whoever gave them that right? I don't think most of us did. They don't have it in the Constitution, and I'm sorry if they're sexually frustrated, but frankly, maybe they can masturbate rather than use a human being to masturbate into. That's not their right. It absolutely is not. And
I'd also like to add in on that, if you don't mind, Doctor, that it's very problematic to assume that women are available for men's pleasure as stress receptacles. I think that negates the voice of half the population. And it also contributes to the problem of looking the other way when a violation does happen, because you assume that this is a consensual thing between two consenting adults. Well, on top of that, you know, what we're talking about here is the large underbelly of what hasn't been talked about for decades, which is sex trafficking, which is the cruelty of prostitution for the majority of participants within prostitution. We're not talking about a victimless crime anymore. We're not talking about consent. We're talking about forced prostitution. We're talking about children groomed from a very young age to become prostitutes. We're talking about that criminal activity that's inherent with the sex trade.
But you're also talking about it in the context of men.
Mm-hmm.
And even when April called him and said, well, what about those lonely men? Well, there are certainly lonely women and other people, too, but you don't necessarily see a lot of women going to prostitutes, male prostitutes.
That usually happens in other countries. But, you know, to stay on topic, not enough appropriate and correct focus or light is shown upon the men involved in trafficking. And just recently, in the last 10 years, has there been a shift really to protect women and to focus on the men that drive the trade?
All right. I want to bring Carol in from Haleiwa, waiting patiently. Thank you very much for your patience, Carol. Welcome to Town Square. Carol, you there?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to move on to John calling us from Haleiwa. Oh, Carol, you there?
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. No, I don't know who she's talking to. She's not talking to us. Going to John calling us from Honolulu.
Yes, hello. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
What I have not heard mentioned is that it has been a federal crime to take a person across state lines for the purpose of prostitution for a century. It's already illegal in this state to force someone to be a prostitute, to live off their earnings, to be involved in prostitution in any way. So it seems to me that there are other things that we might be looking at, devoting our time perhaps to the homeless crisis, than trying to pass a law that apparently duplicates what we already have. Now, two other points I wanted to make, and then I'll let your guests tear apart what I'm about to say. First of all, as long as there are people, we'll say men or women, and I hear you, Beth Ann, there are lonely women out there too, as long as there are lonely people out there who don't have an outlet for sex, there will be people looking for someone to service them. And they can lie to that person and say, I love you, let's have sex. And then as soon as they're done having sex, say, okay, goodbye, I'm out of here. Or they can find somebody and just say, I'll pay you this amount of money to provide me this service. And I'll close by pointing out it is legal for two adults to consent to have sex. And it's legal for two people to enter into a contract where one person gives the other person something of value in exchange for a service. The only situation, the only time that it's not legal is when we're talking about sex, and I think that's illogical. Good luck. I know you're not lonely, but any lonely people out there, I hope you find someone.
Thank you, John, and thank you for your patience in waiting to join the conversation. So a couple of themes that I've heard in the last couple of callers. The idea that, obviously, we need somebody to provide this service. That seems to be a theme that's happening there. And also looking at how that service is provided. If you're exchanging one thing of value for something else, why shouldn't you be able to do it?
So I'd like to...
Catherine John.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. I'd like to address two points that he made. First of all, he was talking about the Mann Act that already exists, which is a federal law. But how often do you see FBI agents out in the streets in Waikiki or in brothels? I hope not often, but the truth is not very often. They rely on months worth of investigative time in order to bring an indictment, and then even more years to bring that to court. So really, we do need effective state laws focusing on sex trafficking. Secondly, he said, that the consenting adult situation of lonely people paying each other for sex. Well, the problem with commodifying a human being for a sex act is this. When a human being is commodified or equated to a dollar symbol, they are bought and sold. You know, they become a thing. They no longer have that human soul recognition. They therefore become disposable. When you can buy and sell something, you can dispose of something at will. And that is where the violence comes in, on top of an inherent sexist trade.
For those of you just joining us, we're talking about sex trafficking, and in particular the sex trafficking bill that may or may not get the governor's green light. What do you feel about it? Have you been following this? And in general, how do you think that we could clean up prostitution in Hawaii? Is such a thing possible in your mind? We've had some differing of opinions of tonight. 941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. If you call us from the neighbor islands, we want to hear from you. Dr. Farley, you were about to say something, and my apologies. I was running off letting everybody know the number so they can join us.
Oh, no, thanks. And I appreciate what Catherine Zian said. I would like to just say a couple things also about that, because there's several important questions there. The first is about the Federal Mann Act, which has indeed been in existence for a long time. It mainly is about transportation as a form of coercion, transportation across state lines. Trafficking is widely misunderstood as meaning transportation, but it doesn't. And in this bill, and generally in the federal anti-trafficking law, trafficking means coercion, fraud, deceit, holding third-party control over another human being, as in pimping. So it's a little different from the Mann Act and transportation. Many of the callers are accepting the myth that prostitution is consenting sex. In other words, they think that women make a choice to enter prostitution the way, for example, we're making a choice to be in this conversation on this radio show right now, and we have the choice to either turn the radio on or turn it off. Nothing could be further than the truth. It is a coerced choice. It's been called voluntary slavery because it looks like it's a voluntary choice, but it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's intimately linked, as this last caller, John, brought up. Prostitution is intimately linked with homelessness. Yes, we should deal with homelessness. 75% of those in prostitution are currently or previously homeless. One way women get housing is by, quote, unquote, consenting or acceding to sexual assault in exchange for a roof over their head, a meal, enough money to buy their kids' clothes for school. That's not a choice the way most of us think of choice. And it's not consent. Finally, I would like to say something about lonely people and sex. I am all in favor of lonely people having all the sex they want. When you bring money into the equation, that imbalances the power relationship. We're not just talking about having sex, comfort sex, great sex, one-night stand sex, whatever you're talking about, it's not the same when money or sale of goods or an exchange of sex for goods or drugs or food comes into the picture. It's not the same at all. Mm-hmm. The money actually becomes the form of coercion.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Farley, I want to just give a chance here for some of our callers to come in and talk to you a bit. We have Ross from Honolulu waiting on the line. Aloha, Ross, and welcome to Town Square.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I just have a bit of a retort, if you will, for your guest. And her response to commoditizing the basically commoditizing a person for prostitution. And my question would be, if that's how you define prostitution as commoditizing a human being because he or she is providing a service with her body or his body for that matter, wouldn't that same definition apply to anything that we pay for when it comes to something that people provide, such as, you know, labor to, you know, work on our gardens or mow our yards or stuff like that? I don't understand the parallel drawn between the two.
All right, Dr. Farley, maybe you can take that on, because it seems like one of the issues that might be inherent in that argument would be power.
Well, yeah, I mean, but when you're growing vegetables and selling them, the vegetables are the commodity. In the sex industry, the human being is a commodity. And as the American Psychological Association has pointed out, when you objectify or commodify someone, whether it's somebody of a certain ethnic group or of a certain sex or of a certain combination of people of color who are women, when you commodify them or objectify them as buyers of sex do, any kind of violence becomes possible, as we know from racist objectification of human beings.
Yes, I find it pretty surprising that the caller actually equated a human being with a vegetable myself.
Well, I think he was more saying that, you know, if you're providing a service, I am a gardener, I'm going to service your garden, and you're going to pay me, as opposed to saying, well, I'm a sex worker and I'm going to service you and you're going to pay me. He's saying, what's the difference?
The difference is that the sex act cannot be removed from the human being. And so what he's saying is that the sex is the commodity, not the human being. But really, in reality, it's the human being that's the commodity, as Dr. Farley says.
All right, we've got a couple more callers on the line we want to try to get through. Zachary calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Zachary. Welcome to Town Square.
Hello, Beth Ann. Yeah, it kind of boils down to values and respect. And, you know, women, you know, considered the lesser sex for a millennium. Basically, you know, I think, you know, having respect to yourself and being treated with respect. And, you know, women are, you know, eventually our mothers. And just having equality there and respect for human life and each other, you know, helps, you know, things to move along. But in other countries, women are still treated very poorly as, you know, property. And that's what it started off, you know, prostitution to begin with. And, you know, just, you know, having women, you know, empower themselves and become stronger and able to, you know, earn an equal living and equal
okay,
pay.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there for a second, because we know that for the last 50-some-odd years, there is not equal pay, and there is still a gender disparity in what men and women make in similar positions or same positions. So, I mean, the idea that somehow all things are good and equal in America seems to be quite a fallacy.
Not at all. No, they're not at all. There's a long way to go. Yeah, now America's a good symbol, and it talks a lot, but it doesn't walk the walk.
Okay, which is in part why we're having this conversation. Thanks, Zachary, for your call. I want to go now to Christy calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Christy. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Thank you for having me on the show. I am a long-time listener. I am what your guest speaker inappropriately refers to as a prostitute. That is not the correct terminology. We actually prefer sex workers. And the idea that you can only have one, I am very anti-sex trafficking, but you have to be very careful with the language that you use to not allow us to lump people who choose to live a certain lifestyle and choose to practice a certain or work in a certain industry and demonize them with the same lump of coal that you demonize, that rightfully demonize those that are trafficking young women illegally or are exploiting young women. There are several women. Several thousands of women, not just in this country, but when you leave outside this country, go to other advanced nations that have that are educated and that do not have pimps, that have never had pimps, that have never been trafficked, that made a conscious decision of what they want to do with their bodies. And it is our right.
Christy, forgive me, but you're breaking up a whole lot. Now we've lost you altogether. I'm really glad you called. I want to get Dr. Farley to answer you, and I hope you'll be able to listen to it on your radio. Dr. Farley, this is exactly the kind of, you know, person that I was referring to earlier who says, wait a minute, this is my choice. I've never been trafficked. This is what I want to do. And there are other places in the world where women choose to do this too and don't regard themselves in the same way as perhaps you are regarding women you call prostitutes. How would you answer her?
I don't call anyone a prostitute. I call them a woman who is in prostitution or been prostituted, and I'm not naming the person, what was done to her. So I don't use that language, but I hear what she's saying. She is saying she made a choice to be a sex worker, and she's not trafficked. And what I would say to her is, then this bill is not about her. Mm-hmm. This is about the 90% of people that are coerced into prostitution, thereby becoming trafficking victims, even though they're not, they don't have shackles and chains on them. They can be coerced by racism, by economic circumstances, and become vulnerable to pimps, or they can think they're going to make plenty of money on by setting up a website, and then they get find that in a city like Honolulu, which there's, with the kind of organized crime pimps around, it's not possible to just run your own website and mm-hmm. stay out of the clutches of organized crime after mm-hmm. a while. You find that out real fast. So I would say this, you know, if she chooses to make a choice, what my understanding is that the vast majority of those in it, as in 90%+, have not made the kind of choice she's saying she made. I don't know. What do you think, Kathy?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think?
I agree. All of our clients who are survivors of prostitution and sex trafficking say the same, in the regard that they did not choose. They were recruited as children, usually around the age of 14 or 15, and that choice was taken away from them, you know. And so I do hear the minority of voices of sex workers wanting to be partitioned from and differentiated from the rest, but they have to also acknowledge that, and they all know this, that there are serious dangers in the sex industry that they themselves have to constantly avoid, that are based on the sexist paradigms of violence that both Melissa Farley and I are trying to convey is the reality of sex work. So we are all speaking on the same side. We never call these sex workers prostitutes. It's always prostituted persons or victims of sex trafficking. We recognize that there are a minority of independent women who have no pimps or traffickers and choose this type of activity. But we'd never legislate any policy against them or criminalize them at all. That's not going to make a dent in abolishing the violence within prostitution.
Not giving the percentages that Dr. Farley gave earlier, that maybe you have maybe a percent or two of people who would fall into that category. Everybody else has been brought in some fashion.
That's right. And our statistics for our agency echo what Dr. Farley says about the majority, 90% or so, being forced or enticed into prostitution at a very young age, not having that choice or agency.
We're coming down to the last couple of minutes of the show, and whereas a lot of this has been a discussion about prostitution and whether or not it should exist, or what do you do to be able to ensure that it either doesn't or is maintained in some fashion that might be accessible to people, we really haven't heard from a lot of people about how they feel about this idea of the sex trafficking bill and whether or not it complements what's already there or whether it's redundant. I guess we're going to have to wait to see what happens from the governor and what he chooses to do about it. Clearly, it's not over yet. But I want to thank both of you for being here this evening. Thanks very much, Catherine Jean, for coming in, the executive director of the Pacific Alliance to Stop Slavery. And also, many thanks to you, Dr. Farley. Appreciate the time that you were able to give us tonight. I know it's much later where you are, so thanks very much for staying up with us tonight.
Thank you. I'm glad to have been here on this conversation, Beth Ann.
And we'll see how things go. And also thanks to Justin Kohler, who was able to join us earlier, prosecuting attorney from Kauai. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. I'll see you tomorrow here at 8 o'clock for The Conversation. In the meantime, have yourselves a good evening. Aloha.